Welcome, virtual entrepreneurs, millennials on the go, and adventure seekers with big dreams. You found the right place. My name is Alexis Teichmiller, a millennial, lifestyle blogger, and digital creative. The Laptop Lifestyle is designed to inspire, educate, and challenge you to live the life you want every day. Together, let's unlock how to live the laptop lifestyle to the fullest. Do you ever feel like sometimes you've built a business that runs you instead of you running it? Or perhaps you've always wanted to do things like travel or create a lifestyle that you wanted, but it just felt so far away. I'm really excited about today's episode with Yarrow Starik because we actually dig into some really incredible topics like these two. Yarrow Starik is the author of Blog Profits Blueprint and the founder of EntrepreneursJourney.com. He began blogging over 10 years ago, initially as a hobby. However, as his income from blogging surpassed $10,000 a month, which is now much more than that, he decided his future lay in this new publishing medium. Since then, Yarrow has used his blog as a platform to sell over $2 million in ebooks, online courses, and membership sites, helping people with their own entrepreneurial journey. Today, Yarrow is a mentor to thousands of experts, authors, coaches, consultants, speakers, and trainers, teaching how to turn knowledge into a profitable online business. Yarrow helps people set up their own blog sales funnel, a system that combines blogging with email marketing to build a platform to sell digital training products on autopilot. Yarrow has a proven track record of results, with his graduate bloggers going on to make thousands of dollars, some even millions, in such diverse niches as book design, ADHD counseling, acne treatment, BMX bikes, skiing, cars, sports cars, speed reading, anything. It's honestly incredible. In this episode, you will learn how to view failures as experiments, the importance of knowing the why behind starting a business, the pros and cons of living a digital nomad lifestyle, how easy it is to travel and work at the same time, how to say no to opportunities that don't serve your long-term goal, and how to really dig and dive deep into who you are, why you do what you do, and who you serve. This episode means so much to me. Just hearing Yarrow talk about his own entrepreneurial journey really made me reflect on mine, and I hope it allows you to kind of reflect on your own as well. As soon as I was done recording with Yarrow, I stepped away from my computer, walked downstairs into my living room from my office, and I thought to myself, why am I not traveling bigger? Why am I not doing more, creating more? He just really made me think about the trajectory of my entrepreneurial journey. And it actually led me to this crazy idea with me and my best friend, Jessica. Now we're planning a trip to Canada for an entire month to kind of test this remote laptop lifestyle, traveling and working at the same time type of scenario that Yarrow's doing right now. I was just so intrigued that I decided I have to do it for myself. And now I am. I cannot wait for you guys to listen to this episode, and please, please, please let me know in the comments or DM me on Instagram or leave a comment on iTunes. Let me know you guys' thoughts. I'd love to hear from you. You guys are why I create and why I have the podcast, so I'd love to hear your thoughts from today's episode. All right, guys, that's enough for me. Let's dive in. Hey, hey, Laptop Lifestylers, welcome back. Thank you guys so much for being here. It is your host, Alexis Teichmiller, and today I have on a special guest who I've been following on the interwebs for the last couple of years, Yarrow Starik. Hey, how's it going? You're coming on the show all the way from Ukraine.
I am Alexis, and I love the name of your show. I think we share a brand here, so this is fantastic.
I know. Your tagline of your business, The Entrepreneur's Journey, is, you know, living the laptop lifestyle, and I love that. We have a lot in common in that way. I'd love for you to kind of share how you got started in that kind of digital nomad laptop lifestyle space for your business.
It's a long story. I'll give you the slightly shorter version. Otherwise, the whole podcast will be just the story. I got my start in university, which was just good timing. I got internet access as I enrolled in my course. And that was in 1998. So it was kind of like the dot-com boom, the very early days. And that made the internet a big part of my life. And I really fell in love with using the internet. Built my first website, which was a card game website. I used to play a collectible card game back in high school, which is like kind of like poker, but with dragons and elves. And there's like a real serious tournament scene around it. So I loved that game for a while. And my first website was about that. It became an online store. It became a forum community. And it's where I learned my kind of 101 of internet marketing skills, how to get traffic, how to grow an audience, how to sell stuff. And I ran down to the post office and sent cards in the mail. And then while I was doing that, I kind of lost interest in the game, but I was very much interested in online entrepreneurship still. So I was looking for a way to avoid a job upon graduation of my university degree. And while I was in university, I actually read a bunch of books and magazines and lots of stories about other online, you know, tech startups, the eBays and Amazons and eventually the Googles and, Napster, you know, really old school ones. So I ended up starting another company, an online editing service, essay and thesis editing. And that was the main business I focused on after graduating. And it became my full-time income. I really did focus most of my energy on it at that point, trying to get to the point where I could live off that business. And that's eventually what happened. It took a few years, obviously. And that was really the first taste of that laptop lifestyle for me. It was a business that I could run from anywhere in the world. I had contract editors, so I wasn't the one actually doing the editing. I just built the website and did the marketing. And I forwarded emails all day between our customers, students, and the editors. And then I eventually hired someone to take over the email role as well. So it became this almost completely hands-off business for me, which was fantastic from a, you know, built the dream business. But then I had a lot of time in my hands and I was actually pretty miserable with the rest of my time because I didn't know what else to do. So thankfully, blogging became a thing at that time. And I had no inclination that blogging would be kind of what I got into, or podcasting eventually too. But it came about as something initially to use as a marketing tool for my editing company. So I started an editing blog, which didn't do so well because I frankly did not like writing about that subject. It's pretty boring, essay editing. No offense to the editors of the world, but it's pretty boring from my point of view. And but it did give me this taste of writing about being an online entrepreneur, which is what I was doing then. I was writing about running this business. So that's when I decided to register essentially a hobby domain name, entrepreneurs-journey.com, which was going to be the place where I would tell stories from these previous two businesses, these websites I had, amongst a few others. I had an English school that I don't have much to say about. It didn't do work very well, but it was certainly an experience. I had a bunch of other websites that didn't go anywhere. And all of these were great stories for a blog. So I poured my time into writing it to the blog while my editing company was still, you know, paying my bills, and I did a bit of traveling. And not that I expected it, but this blog took off and I built an audience. And because I kind of knew if you have an audience, you can make money, I started to play around with things like advertising and affiliate marketing and, you know, selling other people's products and eventually selling my own course and ebooks and a membership site, which is what I still do today. And I actually sold off all my other businesses. I sold the card game business. I sold the editing business. And I went all in on basically being a writer, teacher, you know, educator slash living this kind of digital nomad lifestyle. And that's what I still essentially do today, 12 years later, since I started the blog and the podcast around Entrepreneur's Journey. So that's the short version of the story anyway.
Oh my gosh, Yaro, I have so many questions. There's so many things I want to dig into. You mentioned that there were a couple of websites that failed and you knew that's a part of the entrepreneur's journey, which is, you know, your blog. Can you share some of those failures? I mean, I feel like we highlight, especially in an online space, we tend to highlight more of our successes than we do our failures. I would love for you to share kind of what you've shared online to kind of share some of your failures and how you overcame those and didn't get stuck in them, but instead you just kind of forged on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the word failures either, because they were really just experiments, essentially, and you know, stepping stones towards what I wanted to build eventually. And a lot of it was exploration of what I personally wanted out of an online business. And I do remember, like, there was a period probably around the first maybe 3 or 4 years where I had this card game business that was doing okay. You know, it wasn't super huge money, $500 a month maybe at best, but I'd lost interest in the game and I was moving away from that subject and I wanted something bigger. And that's when I fell for what you would call, you know, shiny object syndrome in today's internet marketing vernacular, where there were just, and it still hasn't changed, there was these opportunities that kept popping up from selling affiliate products using Google AdWords campaigns. And then there was like becoming an eBay power seller, or eventually, you know, an Amazon seller, or, you know, becoming really good at e-commerce and sourcing products from China or whatever. You know, there were so many different things coming up. Email marketing was big back then too. So I was looking at all these opportunities, and just also being an entrepreneur, I want to start a website about this topic or this topic or this topic. And unfortunately, I had the skills to build my own rudimentary website. So I would often spend long hours in the night just putting together a basic website design. And bearing in mind, this is before WordPress or any of these amazing website builders we have today. So I'd hand code with HTML, and I wasn't good at it. You know, I taught myself, but I really wasn't a pro. I'm not strong in that area. So I can just rattle off a couple of the websites. I had an idea for kind of like an online trading community. I wanted to sort of marry the concept of, I guess, Craigslist with students, because I was already targeting students with my editing company. I thought, well, maybe I'll launch a Craigslist targeted at students. You know, bought a domain name, built the website, installed forums, and then of course put it out there. But and there was no audience, and I had no desire to go out and market something that really was very difficult to grow, because you know, it's that catch-22 situation. You don't have an audience, therefore you don't attract an audience, especially with something like an online trading forum. I had a brief experiment in the world of MP3s. So back when MP3 music was booming and becoming this, you know, new technology, and there was all this stolen music with Napster and so forth, I wanted to have my own MP3 website. So I got a great domain name. I think it was mp3now.com. I loved it. Again, built a whole website around this subject and finished it, launched it, and then thought, what am I doing? I'm getting into an area where people are getting sued on a regular basis. This is crazy. Switched that website off almost straight after it was launched. So, you know, no, I enjoyed the building process, I think, sometimes more than anything else. I had another one. I was big into changing the world type topics. So I got a domain name called youngactivist.com. Again, built a whole website around this topic, launched it, and then stopped and went, how am I going to make money from this topic? Because, you know, there really wasn't a strategy behind it other than I want to explore this topic. But I was going after people who don't spend money. There's not a lot of activists who are, you know, going to buy stuff around that topic. And I would have had to grow in a huge audience, which, again, you know, didn't make sense to focus my time there when I had this working editing business, or I had this working card game business, or both. So there was those things. I also played with some pay-per-click advertising very briefly. But again, I'm not good with the numbers, and that's really a numbers game. So I kind of stopped with that. But, you know, all those things showed me, and I didn't even mention the English school. That wasn't even an online business. That I actually rented an office for almost a year. I won't go into that story because there's literally half an hour. I can tell you the whole story from start to finish. But the long story short is I did launch this English school, and I discovered the fact that I'd created what I tried to avoid my entire life, which was a job, an office that I had to go to from a certain set hours to make sure it was open in case people showed up and wanted to buy something from me, which was horrible compared to this online editing business, which was open 24/7 without me being there. So all those kind of experiences just showed me how good the business I had was with the editing business. And also, once blogging started, I kind of found the last missing ingredient for me. What I didn't get from the editing business was it wasn't tapping into some aspect of creativity that I got personal satisfaction from. So I was making good money. It was very hands-off. Sure, I could have sat at the beach all day long and just, you know, read books, but that's boring. When I started blogging and teaching and writing and creating, that allowed me to tap into not just a great lucrative income stream, a great business model for living a laptop lifestyle, but I loved the actual job I had and still have today. I loved and discovered that I loved writing, discovered that I loved talking about it like we're doing now, doing podcasts, interviewing other people, creating courses, and setting up systems to sell through content. So all the things that you know about and we do on a regular basis. So I love that topic.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you didn't get stuck. You just kept trying and experimenting. And now you know what works and you're doing what works. And I think a lot of times we can get really stuck or stagnant or even complacent in where we are because we think, well, this is working and I can just stay here and maybe not grow and maybe it's not challenging anymore. And I think that's a pretty common thread of entrepreneurs is we like to be challenged. You know, we want to use our creativity. We want to solve problems. We want to help people. And that seems like that element of helping people is something that's really important to you. And it kind of leads into my next question is, why do you blog? Why do you create these things on the internet and help people?
Well, I'll be flat out honest with you. There was obviously an evolution of my needs as an entrepreneur. And I think we all kind of go through this ideally, hopefully everyone does. Financially, that's the first need. Like you want to build an income stream so you don't have to get a job or you can support your family or travel or, mm-hmm. Have more time to yourself. So for me, it was same story. I wanted to, move out of my mother's house. I wanted to have my own place, my own car. So I think initial motivation is to prove to yourself that you can be financially independent from your own business. That is huge. It's huge for your confidence. It's huge for, just changing your life on such a powerful way. So that was the first box that I felt I went after more than anything else. And I won't lie to you. Yes, I understood I needed to help people, but I saw that as just a way to help myself. It's a bit self-centered, yeah. But I think that's what we all do to start with. It's needs before anything else. I remember this moment very clear to me. I'd probably been blogging for already about 5 years, maybe 4 or 5 years. And the last 2 years or so had been really good. I'd well and truly, made the most money I'd made with any of my businesses. I'd bought my own place. I'd sold the editing company, so I'd made a chunk of money from that. I felt like I didn't have to make a decision purely based on money as the main driver at that point. And that's a lovely place to get to because you get to ask yourself what you really want to do without factoring in how much you're going to make from doing it. And I remember clearly, actually, I came home from traveling around the world. I'd spent 9 months doing a complete circle, and I'd visited like 28 different cities. And I came back to an opportunity to become essentially a paid speaker or a seller from the stage, which some of my friends were doing in Australia at the time. And they were doing really well. It's an amazing business model. They run these 3-day weekend workshops and they'd sell a high-end coaching program, like a year-long coaching program for anywhere between $10,000 and $20,000 a year. And they'd bring in sometimes, 40 or 50 people per weekend workshop. So, you can do the math and they're doing several million dollars a year. And it was very lucrative, very exciting. And I initially signed on to say yes, because I was like, how could I not say yes? This is clearly the next step for me in everything financially and, growth. And then I started kind of realizing what that entailed. And they were telling me a bit more about it. And I realized I'd be traveling around Australia, living in hotels, getting on stage, and sort of pitching, educating people. That part's good, but pitching. And by then I'd done a bit of speaking on stage. And as much as I enjoyed the process, it was very draining. And, doing it once every 3 months was kind of okay. But the idea of every weekend that could be my life was not as appealing. Mm-hmm. So I actually went back and turned it down and realized for me, I was interested in exploring different projects. And I was able to make that decision based on, what topics am I interested in? What business models do I want to use? What subjects do I want to write about? Do I want to start something completely different? Maybe do a startup in the tech space, which I actually kind of did for a couple of years. And also, do I just want to stop? And maybe, I actually remember I felt my social life was weak then because I just basically become completely different to my friends prior to my trip around the world. I was no longer a person who went through university and then got a job. I didn't do that. I left and traveled the world and I came back with pretty much no friends who had done what I did besides a couple of people here and there. So I thought, actually, what I want to do is create a new social group of people, more entrepreneurial, you know, more commonalities and topics and interests and direction in life, more sort of progressive people, less career-minded people. So I actually focused on that as my primary goal for the next 12 months. I remember clearly, well, I still grew and continued to grow my existing business, but I actually said no to that pathway. And I think, you know, part of that decision-making process was because I had the flexibility to do that. And then, you know, you mentioned the word helping people and why do I blog, to tie this back into your original question. Even just in the last few years, thankfully I've pretty much had that freedom of choice ever since then. So, you know, literally for the last 10 years, I've been able to go, what I want to do, why do I want to do it? If I want to travel, I can travel. If I want to start a new business, I can do that. If I want to, you know, keep growing the current business, I can do that. And over and over and over again, especially the older I get, I'm realizing that writing is obviously the core thing I enjoy the most. I still love just going to cafe and writing on a blog post. But yeah, nowadays, it's not just about, you know, teaching how to make money. It's like, what subjects do I feel I can offer the most help with, share the best stories with, and do that just for the sake of putting that content out there. You know, it doesn't have to be like the early days when that's got to be the part of a business that will make money. The beautiful thing is, I know if you do good work helping people, it actually becomes the platform for business if you want it to be, you know, but the pressure is not there. The neediness to make money is not there. So it's nice to be able to explore that. And I wish everyone who's creative had the opportunity, especially from a financial point of view, to say, I can do this just to explore my craft without even contemplating whether this is going to make money or not. If it does, it's great. If it doesn't, that's okay. And, you know, thankfully I can. And kind of part of my goal is to help as many people reach that point as I can as well. That's kind of built into my teaching business.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you've been a part of this space for so long, Yaro. Like, you've seen the evolution of the blogging industry, the dot-com boom, people really creating lifestyles and careers from the internet. And I love your outlook on the financial aspect. And you said this might be a bit selfish, but I don't think it is at all. I mean, we go get jobs to support ourselves financially. So what's the difference by going and working for someone else versus choosing to work for yourself? Like, I think being financially stable is number one, the most important part of that entrepreneurship's journey so that they can help people. Kind of transitioning into your digital nomad life. Like, you know, you said you mentioned that you circumnavigated the world and traveled for 9 months. And I know now you are in a busy season of travel and kind of living remotely. How does that work? And I mean, there's a lot of people that are like, I just want to have a job that's remote so that I can travel. There are a lot of people that want to do that. Like, share that lifestyle, maybe the good and the bad of it. You know, there's not like having a remote job and traveling all the time. It sounds really glamorous, but sometimes it's not.
No, I mean, there's pros and cons to both sides. I mean, it's never been easier to do the laptop digital nomad lifestyle. That's for sure. You know, when I did it, that first round the world trip, no Airbnb, no Uber. There were like VRBO, which was the main website I used. And then, of course, hotels. Nowadays, you know, Airbnb makes it so easy to essentially live what you would call a normal home life. As I'm talking to you right now, I'm in a, you know, two-bedroom apartment in Ukraine, in Lviv, and it's got a kitchen, it's got all the things you normally would expect, so I can cook at night if I, you know, don't want to always eat out, which is a big part of, you know, what I value in sort of the traveling lifestyles. You know, most people are used to having a two-week holiday that includes eating at restaurants every single meal. I hate that. I don't mind, you know, eating at restaurants, but I'd rather it be kind of like when you're home. You eat at restaurants maybe two or three times, you know, when you're with Friday night. I often eat out at lunch because I'll be out anyway, just working and exploring. But you get that potential to kind of live a normal lifestyle. Sort of the way I like, actually wrote an article just recently about the pros and cons. So this is really totally in my mind. The main disadvantage of perpetually living a digital nomad lifestyle is you miss the things like your regular friendships, your regular yoga class, although you could certainly find a yoga class while you're traveling, And the stability and consistency of having your own stuff and, you know, the space to store your own stuff. And that does make it easier for certainly getting certain tasks done. Like, you know, if you keep moving, it becomes more difficult to, for example, sit down and record video for a course. Not that you can't do it while you're traveling, but really you should stop and have like a whole month or 2 months or 3 months in one space. And maybe even, you know, find a co-working space or some sort of studio where you could actually record the training. And I've done that before. I created a whole course once when I was in Vancouver, or the second half of a course. And that's fine because I'm recording slides, so it wasn't too complicated. And this is an occupational hazard of actually sampling and experiencing the digital nomad lifestyle. Once you've done it, when you do go home or you do go to a place and you find yourself there for like 3 months or more, you start getting bored. You realize right. that going on the same bus or the same, you know, walking the same path in a city or just seeing the same things, you just like, I'm addicted a little bit to that feeling of, this is a new city. This is a new set of people. This is a new culture. This is a new restaurant. You know, this is new chocolate in my case. Ironically, the flip side of that is you also enjoy coming back to those things you have experienced before too. Like, oh, I really love the, you know, the hot chocolate in Montreal, or I really love the ribs in Ukraine, or the, you know, the vegetarian restaurants in, Barcelona or something like that. And there's all these opportunities to re-experience things you've experienced while traveling. So I try to mix as much as I can of both things. So like, I like going back to places I've been. I like being in a place for long enough to feel like I'm living there. But I also, you know, like the change, I guess, and the constant movement. At the same time, I hate flying. I try and avoid long flights if I can, which is kind of ironic. Yeah. If I could catch a train everywhere on the planet, I totally would. I just love trains compared to flying. It's just so much easier to work. And I don't know, you see the countryside. It's just a bit slow, especially for those long distances. So got to fly sometimes. Yeah. Plus there's oceans and all that. So there's definitely a variety of pros and cons. But I really feel like people like listening to this need to understand how easy it is to do it today, especially even on a small budget. Like I'm in Ukraine, and I put it simply, my Uber trip from, you know, the airport to the Airbnb was $3. Lunch was $5. I'm in a big, what you'd call an expensive sort of Airbnb, and you know, it can be like $25 a night, which for most places that'll be a hostel, but you can even find places for $10 a night, $5 a night if you're okay with sharing a room, or you know, just renting a room. Where I rent the entire apartment. So, you know, cost-wise, easy. Internet, fine. We're obviously recording now and it's working. lifestyle stuff it's modern. You know, it's not super modern. It's not, you're not going to get everything you want. Like I haven't found the perfect organic place, although last stop before Ukraine was Poland, and Poland had a couple of great organic grocery stores, which I look for and really value. So, and they're cheap in Poland too, a bit more expensive than Ukraine, but far less than say Barcelona or Paris or London. So, Yeah. So the answer is, I think, you know, it's easier than you think. Most people don't do it because of some kind of fear, you know, fear of income stability, or, you know, not having enough, or leaving friends and family and things that we're used to, you know, the habits, the comfort zones. So I think it's just worth just to try it even for a month to shake that up and taste it. You know, I don't know how much you've done of it, Alexis, but I hope you've done some.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've actually done a lot in the last year and a half. Travel has become a really important part of my journey. I mean, I feel like every week I'm in a different place. I do a lot of domestic travel actually. So there's a lot of things in the US I haven't quite, you know, things I want to see, places I haven't been. So I've been doing a lot of domestic travel, but I'm going to Belize for the first time in a couple months. So I'm really excited about that. I'm going to swim the sharks, Yaro.
Oh, wow. Oh, you're tough.
but no, I agree. It's not as difficult as it might look financially. It's almost more of an emotional toll of you're leaving your comfort zone. You're doing something that's outside of the normal. I love that you mentioned that this was something that your friends weren't doing. You know, you're like a lot of even my friends are not living a laptop lifestyle, working for remote online companies, you know, they have more of a traditional job, like in the medical field or in accounting and things like that. So there's kind of that emotional toll that this kind of life takes on you, but also the freedom that it can give you and your business. And what has it been like for your business to travel? I mean, the creativity, the experiences, the culture. I mean, it's probably very stimulating. I feel like there's always new ideas and things that challenge you as a business owner too.
Oh yeah. I mean, you could probably just write about your thoughts as you travel and your experiences as it relates to whatever your topic is. You know, if you're a food blogger, the food. If you're a personal development blogger, what you're experiencing and feeling. If you're a business blogger, all the business ideas and things you're being exposed to, right? So there's always stimulation. I find though, like, you know, to be very clear, I built my business to facilitate exactly what I want to do. So it's built around my writing, it's built around my teaching, but I have a team and I have a bunch of emails and, you know, automation running. Like actually, as we're talking right now, it's a great example because I haven't done like a launch. I haven't sort of sat down and promoted a product manually myself with my team all the way since January. That was the last time I did something. And, you know, we're talking now in July. So it's been 6 months where my business has run as a machine, largely without me. I certainly check in. We talk on Slack with my team. And I write blog posts because that's what I do. And it's fun. I would do it anyway. I lead a monthly coaching call for my membership and my coaching clients. But it's very hands-off. Yet, all these sales keep coming in. You know, new members join my membership site, new people join my flagship course, people buy my ebooks, and it's all being driven by this machine that I built over the last, I mean, really, to be honest, it's probably 4 years now because I had to create new products, create new funnels, new email systems. But once you set it up, it's such a satisfying thing to see work. I do remember the first time I sold an ebook on autopilot without having to actually actively promote it. You know, I didn't have to write a bunch of emails to sell it or do some sort of launch campaign or get affiliates to promote it or even buy Facebook ads. It was just someone read my blog post, joined my automatic email course, and then bought the book. And that was 5 years ago. And, you know, it's been happening countless times now since then for all my products. And that's proof of a system. That's why it's very satisfying. But financially, it's, you know, pays all my staff. It gives me plenty of money to spend on traveling, money to invest. So it's a beautiful thing. It's the simplest way to put it, but it was very deliberately built to do that, you know, in terms of the business model.
Yeah. I love that you said that you built your business to do what you wanted it to do. And I always think of this quote, do you run your business or does your business run you? And I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs or if whether you're building a side hustle or a side project that, you know, you're making income from, just like being mindful of whether or not you are actually in control of the growth and of the direction of the business versus just kind of building something and then letting it grow like a weed in different areas that you might not actually want it to grow into. And how do you say no to things that still can turn profit? Like, how do you decide, all right, this could be successful, but I'm not going, like, even like your opportunity in Australia, how have you refined that in your mind? Or is there a way that you kind of approach decision-making in a way of this could make me a lot of money, or this could be an interesting career path, but I'm not going to go down that road?
Yeah, I mean, I faced this back in the years when my blog was really taking off. I think, you know, anyone who does some kind of media platform that builds an audience, you're just bound to get opportunities. You get, you know, conversations. Right. Like you and I could talk after this and say, hey, what are you doing? And I say this, and then you say what you're doing, and then go, you know what, we could like do something there. So that's constantly happening. I learned two things. I obviously got very clear on my objectives, my goals with the business. So, and then that changes because, like I said, early days, it was all about cash flow. And then once you get cash flow, it's all about building assets. You want to buy your first house. You want to have X amount of dollars in the bank account, you know, then maybe you start hiring people. So you want to have enough money to, you know, keep them working. And then you want to make the business run entirely without you, maybe even sell it like I did with my editing company. So there's different goals along the way. But certainly for the last few years, for me, it's been really easy to say no, because I built a machine that internally promotes me. Before that, I was part of, you know, big affiliate promotions, and I do big affiliate campaigns of my own. So I'd have people promote my stuff, which means I'd have to coordinate with them. I'd get invites to speak on stage, which I still do, and I kind of cherry pick which events I talk at. I still get interviews like podcasts like this, and you know, I love doing these, and I usually don't say no because I like helping people. Plus, you know, you're helping me spread my message. So marketing is one of the hardest things to do, and it's crazy to say no when you get an opportunity to share your message. So those things, thankfully, I do enjoy. So it's not like a thing I feel like saying no to, but I certainly have very much structured. And this is something I don't see many people do, because the kind of classic path for an expert information marketer, which is, you know, what I am, and I think a lot of listeners will be too, the classic path to grow that kind of business is strategic joint ventures and affiliate promotions. So partnering with someone, maybe doing a webinar together, they promote you, maybe down the line you have to promote them, and you set up these campaigns together. And a lot of the growth comes from this sort of cross-pollination of audiences. You share me, I share you, then I do a launch and you promote it. Then someone else does a launch and I promote them. And I was a part of that world for a good number of years, made a ton of money from affiliate promotions and got some great growth in my business. But I got tired of that sort of sense of reciprocation and constant relationship building and maintenance. I think it's something people need to go through at some point, especially to get that initial traction, if that's the path you want to take for growth, which I did. And I wholeheartedly endorse it as a great pathway for growth. But in more recent years, I've just relied and continue to rely on content. And, you know, I love content because you build something that can produce traffic and audience for years to come. I wrote an article in 2006 that still brings in the number one article on my blog. And that was over 10 years ago now, because of Google search traffic going to that piece of content. And if you multiply that times, you know, several hundred amazing blog posts, and you've got this incoming audience that's joining your email list, and a few of them, very small few, but a few of them are buying your stuff. So when you feel the sense of confidence to know that your business is feeding itself, then you don't have that maybe neediness to, I've got to get this partnership going, or I've got to, you know, make sure this Facebook ad campaign is working. Those things are great too. And I've done them. I've done Facebook ads and I've done the partnerships. But I like to know that the sort of core income cash flow, it's not necessarily growth. Like, growth does require work, but as a sort of status quo baseline, it reached a point where I'm like, this is more money than I will ever need. It allows me to have my, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 contractors all paid. They're doing all the customer support. They're doing all the onboarding. So that's running itself. So it really takes me, you know, 95% out of the business, and that's, and leaves me with the 5% I love. So that's ideal. So, as I said, it's very strategically built that way, but that may not be the listener's goal. Like, I know, because I had goals, like, I got to get to 7 figures this year. I'm tired of making only $500,000 a year. I want to make $1 million a year. And I've had those kind of motivations over the years too. And you have to ask yourself why. Like, that's the irony sometimes, is you're only doing it because growth for growth's sake. And your peer group, we are so influenced by, you know, our friends and colleagues posting on Facebook, oh, I just cracked 6 figures. Oh, I just cracked $500,000. Oh, I just cracked $1 million a year. Oh, $10 million a year. You know, there's always another rung. And there's nothing wrong with that ladder. But I think it's very similar to a career ladder. It's like the entrepreneurial career ladder, where you're driven purely by a kind of growth for growth's sake, or your ego or numerical rewards. And don't get me wrong, making money is great, and more money is better. But you reach a point where there's a diminishing returns to your life if you make more money. Like, you know, once you make $250,000 a year from a business, you pretty much can do anything you want. Now, what happens after that can often return less value to your life. You might make $500,000 or $1 million, but you're suddenly working 3 times, 4 times as hard. So you're sacrificing the lifestyle freedom, you know, no more laptop lifestyle. It's clients, it's mastermind groups, it's constantly creating product or marketing, or sitting on Facebook and Instagram all day, or coordinating a team all day, or hiring and firing all day, you know, all these things that happen. And some people love that, and they want to be the next, you know, Elon Musk or whatever. But I personally was like, I know I've seen people go down that path. So that's not what I want. It is a laptop lifestyle for a reason. And I hope the people listening to this understand the difference and, you know, they're clear on what their goals are too.
Thank you for diving into that. You did, like, that was just amazing. I can't wait to listen to that again and just take notes to everything that you just said, because it is so important to get clear on what you do, why you do it, and who you do it for, but also making sure that all of those things are in alignment with who you actually want to be too and the kind of life that you want to live. So I 100% agree with that. What do you think has been the most challenging aspect of being a digital nomad and traveling alone and being an entrepreneur? I know you have a team, but there's a lot of aspect of entrepreneurship that can be kind of lonely. So, like, what has been your biggest challenge there? Or do you like that kind of independence of not necessarily having to rely on anybody?
Well, I do rely on my team, so that's certainly not, you know, I'm not 100% on my own in that regard. I mean, I think I know what you're getting at here. The sort of, you know, you don't have an office to go to where you've got your friends working on projects together, where you're meeting face to face, and especially the more recent lifestyle I've led, where I've last 6 months, I've moved around a lot, you know, no more than 1 month in one place. So it's not long enough to even make friends in a co-working space or something like that, you know, which I've done. I moved to Melbourne a few years back after living in Brisbane for most of my life in Australia. And yeah, I went to some co-working spaces. I went to some networking events, but I still found myself doing the same thing most days, heading to a cafe and working from there, you know, and then exercising and cooking from home. So I can be a creature of habit despite changing environment, right? You know, I'll do the same thing in Ukraine as I might do in London, as I might do in Melbourne. But there certainly comes a time where you do value and miss the interaction with the friends who, you know, I guess get you is the simplest way to put it, or even the, you know, the colleagues that get you. So, you know, I've got my good friends back in Australia, a couple of guys I've done business stuff with, plus we just have, you know, common interests and shared history. So, you know, we'll still talk on a mastermind Skype call, maybe, you know, every few months. And obviously there's Facebook and all that. So that's helpful. While you're in a new city, like for me, one of the biggest lessons I took away from the first round the world trip I did about 10 years ago was that I moved around too much too quickly. I was moving around every 7 days at some point then, which was nuts, because you'd be planning your next trip while you're in the current trip. So it was perpetual preparation, and that sucks. So nowadays it's more like, you know, let's do a month here, a month there, and maybe even longer than that. Especially, like, for example, I want to do a little campaign coming up in the next couple of months. So I'm going to stay put here in Ukraine, do a bit of work and get that out the door. And when that happens, when you have that time, you do get to repeat a few things, like, you know, go to the same cafe where you might start seeing the same faces. Bit difficult for me right now in Ukraine because I don't speak the language, so I'm not exactly making a lot of contacts that way. But I do have a couple of semi-family friends, you might call them. So, you know, I've made those kind of contacts, and I've returned to Ukraine, so I kind of seeing them again. So the options are there. And you know, I've got a friend who also runs his own business. He's like an entertainer, and he's in LA right now, you know, getting that career going. But he's traveled a lot too, and you know, he has an uncanny ability just to integrate himself into social groups just as part of his work. You know, he has to network because he needs to meet the managers and the bosses in order to get some of the gigs that he does. So it's certainly possible. Me personally, I'm an introvert. It's weird. I can not talk to a human being face to face the entire day, yet have had so many Facebook, Slack, Skype, text message, you know, conversations that day. I feel like I've actually talked to a lot of people, which I kind of have, but they've been around the world online. So, you know, there's layers there. You know, I don't think no human being is an island. At some point, you know, if you want to have a relationship, you got to be face to face. But, you know, it's the options are there. It's whether you choose and what you choose. That's always the case.
Yeah. 100% agree with that. You're not an island. That's one of my favorite personal quotes. I think about that personally and then also in business of sometimes I can make myself an island because I'm a little stubborn. And then I'm like, no. This island cannot be population of one. It is population of many. Well, Yara, this has been such a gift getting to just hear how you approach the laptop lifestyle, how you live it, and how you've built all of your businesses. I'm so grateful for our conversation. And I actually just have one more question for you. But before I ask it, I would love for you to share, where can people find you online and get all the goodies?
Yeah, so there's two things. There's my name. I think I mentioned this to you before. I'm kind of going for an Oprah, Madonna, one name thing. And thankfully, besides my father, who has the same name, he's in the other room, there isn't many Yaros online. So if you remember and search Google for Y-A-R-O, you will definitely find my blog, my podcast, and all my content. But in particular, if you do want to follow the model that I teach, which is set up a blog, grow an email list, and sell your own digital training products, so you're an expert, a teacher, a creator of content, then I wholeheartedly recommend you get my free report, which is called the Blog Profits Blueprint. And that's available from blogprofitsblueprint.com. 100% free in audio and text. And it just goes through the entire business model that I use that I've been teaching for 10 years, countless case studies of people who've succeeded with that. So blogprofitsblueprint.com.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank you so much. And I will put that in the show notes as well for anybody. So that'll be in the show notes. So you can just link to his website and link to that blueprint as well. I know I'm definitely going to be downloading that, Yaro. So my last question for you is, what does the laptop lifestyle mean to you?
Freedom. It's always been freedom. It's almost a cliche answer, I think, for us lifestyle entrepreneurs, because that's what drives us to do everything that we do. I think it's what drives most human beings to do everything that we do as well, as we all want that potential to have the power to make a choice without feeling restricted in that choice. And that's always been the case for me. My business is a vehicle for giving me freedom of choice. It's very, very similar to what you said before. You know, you run a business for yourself. Your business doesn't run you. So your business should fuel your life, and you should not be fueling your business. And there's a fine line there, and you often will be starting where it feels like your business is controlling you. But once you get to the point where you're controlling your business and then you're out of your business and it's running itself, then you really get to taste that true freedom. And like I said earlier, I really, wish and pray and hope for everyone listening in who's still striving for the experience. But to get to the point where you make enough money and you feel confident in the income that comes from your business, that you can make a choice of what to do with your time, regardless of financial considerations. So if you just want to read all day or play the guitar or, sit on the beach or perpetually travel to look at history or stay in one city and just, play with your kids all day, whatever that thing is for you, you get the opportunity to make that choice of complete freedom. For me, that's what I've been striving for from day one. I've successfully avoided full-time work my entire life, and fingers crossed I will never have to get a job. So, for me, laptop lifestyle is freedom.